Welcome to Conversations on the Porch, where I'm joined by, well, guests, where we just explore the world and explore many things. Welcome to Conversations on the Porch. I wonder who's walking up the gravel path today and knocking at my door. This is Conversations on the Porch. Well, a warm welcome to tonight's Conversations on the Porch, where I'm joined by people from around the world, mainly the UK tonight, because some of our American friends, they've got issues. They can't remember the time. They've also got snow blizzards and all sorts going on. So welcome to Zoe, to Laura and Phil. How are we?
Yeah, we're good.
Great, thank you.
We're all good. Okay, so look, for people joining us for the first time, let's just do some intros before we get into this interesting topic tonight. So, Zoe, give the listeners an insight into what you're all about.
Yes, so hi, I'm Zoe Bishop. I'm a professional encourager and a huge advocate that supports all things to do with well-being. I presenter on Yow Radio. I do the Feel Good Friday show every week.
Cool, cool. And Laura?
Hi, I'm Laura Tube, and my show is once a month on a Sunday evening, and it's called Project Me because I'm helping you take control in an uncontrollable world so that you can flourish.
So you can flourish. And Phil?
Yeah, Phil Holdsworth. I'm a money coach and money psychologist and also a podcast host. So lovely to be here.
Wonderful. And I'm the founder of Yow Radio. Used to be an inspirational coach. I guess I still am if I did anything, but I don't do much now. I'm so busy doing other things. So welcome along. If you're listening online and you want to pose a question to any of us today throughout the evening, you can do. We're going to be talking about balancing technology and wellness. Okay, what a great topic, and exploring the effects of technology on mental health. And we're going to discuss some strategies for maintaining health and discuss effective ways that we can make the balance between technology and wellness, between screen time and well-being. So what a great topic, because I guess we live in this stressful world and everybody talks about balance and wellness. And there we are, bombarded by technology. So first off, has anybody got any thoughts on just think about the effect that technology can have on our health and wellness? Anybody want to kick off? Go on, Zoe. I know you'll love this topic, so let's kick off with yourself first.
Yeah, I think this topic is so exciting to talk about. There's loads of things we can all share. Yeah, I think when we look at balancing technology and wellness, we have to think about boundaries, and you know, and there are massive pros of technology. Just, you know, some examples for me: keeping in touch with family, you know, things on business. I can talk to people across the world in the US. There are so many amazing things that technology brings, but I think we have to be really clear, like on boundaries and screen time. I'm also a mom of two girls aged 8 and 11, and I can tell you actually this area is, you know, something that is discussed all the time, like amongst friends, and I think is actually one of the most difficult things to parent around is, you know, screen time, social media, all of this. I think, you know, there is possibly loads of research suggesting that social media can have an impact on our well-being and our mental health. So again, but it's, you know, I think one of the most important things is talking about this word balance and talking about boundaries and how we can, you know, get the best of both worlds.
You know, so it's interesting you say that, because I was just looking up and some research on this, and you touched on the research, and there's some studies from the National Library of Medicine that I came across, and it has shown that for some people, being constantly connected can cause psychological issues, such as, everybody will go with this one, I guess, the expectation of instant gratification, distraction, narcissism, sleep issues, stress, even anxiety and depression. So there are things. And a lighthearted story on this one day. I was talking to somebody about the mobile phone and how often they look at it and view it. And Oh yes, you know, I have it at the side of my bed, you know, at night, really. And so why do you do that then? Well, because I have my alarms in the morning. I went, what do you buy an alarm clock? Phone off. You know what I mean? One of the simple things there. So some interesting things there, you know, instant gratification, distraction, sleep issues, stress, anxiety, and depression. Laura, any thoughts from you?
Do you know, I was going to say, you must have seen my anticipatory comment through the vibes. Because actually, I wrote down here, loneliness. And actually, in all of those things that you said, I actually think technology can drive a sense of loneliness and a sense of expectation. Because, I mean, hilariously, I mean, this is now showing my age, but I remember vividly 15, 16 years ago, it's got to be now, so within recent history, when I was told that the world was going to become so connected, it was going to shrink in size, you know, metaphorically speaking, because of technology. And sitting there going, nah, never. It's not going to happen within the next 10 years. Of course, it did happen within the next 10 years, and that's where we find ourselves. But actually, in that increasing connectivity, I think actually as human beings, we've actually become increasingly disconnected and actually there are many, many people where the instant gratification, the pursuit of perfection as personified through social media that is done via technology has meant that people have felt more isolated in their feelings about, you know, what is real, what is not real, because they're visually seeing all this stimulation and they're feeling increasingly lonely. So for me, in that summary of the research, actually, that was the bit that was the word that I put down that seemed to be missing within there. Mm-hmm. That research was that you've described, they were talking about that at the World Economic Forum at the beginning of the year at Davos. And a scary statistic that said that in excess of 80% of UK three-year-olds, emphasis of three-year-olds, had access to mobile technology and were using it. And that, she did back it up saying, you know, the reality is, I can't say whether that's a mobile phone or whether it's a tablet. But either way, it doesn't really matter. Mobile technology, they are accessing it. And yet that kind of goes to a place of, and I'll share the link to that because it's incredibly fascinating because it supported everything you were saying, but it also supported this idea that actually we're increasingly becoming disconnected despite being connected. And I think it impacts our ability to truly communicate as well.
That's just picking up on what you were saying there, Laura. It's like, I think we get confused about just what is the real world anymore, about what's out there. Do you, Bill, anything to add to that, do you think?
Yeah, well, I take what Zoe was saying earlier about the fact that there are lots of positives about technology, and that is a driver in terms of more and more connection, even the advent of AI. And, you know, and when anything new comes on the scene, there's always a sense from some of, well, this is going to replace the human race. And, you know, and there's that sort of, there's that negative part. And I suppose that's probably driven by the fact that, you know, sometimes we're not very good with change and handling change. However, having said all that, and the fact that there are lots of good things out there, we can be guilty of pursuing lots of these good things without looking at the unintended consequences. And I think it's already been articulated, the disconnect, you know, seeing young people who are losing or don't really know how to engage in socially face to face. You know, they're sat at a table and they're communicating with each other via their phones, and yet they're sat either side of the table. And I see this in schools in sort of break times when they can use their phones. And so I look at it and I think we mustn't lose sight of the need for human connectivity. That is a powerful sort of boost to our well-being when we are connected. Some people say, oh, you know, I like the isolation. But actually, we were never geared for isolation, actually. And somebody said to me today, did you know that just 12 hours of not talking to another human being and psychosis begins to set in? I thought, really?
Wow.
So, you know, and I find myself, I can get so wrapped up in my work online that I forget to be intentional about getting up and walking around or just taking time out to go and talk to somebody, which I know is like my battery. You know, being with other people is like being recharged for me. I know it's different for other people, but, and so I have to be more intentional. And I think that's something that really we need to encourage, both in terms of that intentionality, but also not losing sight of the need for us as human beings to be connected to our fellow human beings.
Good. And Phil, essentially, that thing that you just talked about there, about that 12 hours thing.
Yeah.
If we flip that round a bit, right, and we said to somebody, well, unfortunately, every day you're going to have to spend 12 hours in solitary confinement. Can you imagine the reaction that would be to somebody? What?
Yeah,
you know, you're going to lock it away for 12 hours. You can't talk to anybody or anything like that. That'd be absolutely mind-boggling.
But we had that speed, COVID.
Yeah,
you know, and the assumption it's okay because we're all connected. Yet I think there's about 11 million people who still don't have connection for one reason or another. So if you were one of those 11 million, you're not connected, and then you're also locked down. That's terrible. But equally at the same time, if all you ever do is just connect with people online, that physical connection with another fellow human being, when that's missing, has a serious detrimental impact on our well-being.
Yeah, well, Zoe, just want to come back to you as well, and we'll put this one out to everybody, but especially around young people, and like you mentioned about you know your daughters and things like that. You know, I've got a grandson, 12-year-old, and so, you know, I hear things around what's going on in schools and all that kind of thing. One of the big pressures that I'm hearing that young people are finding is on around like WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever. If they're not getting the likes, if they're not getting some nice messages on Facebook, they get upset that somebody else has, you liked my post, but you didn't like my post. Don't you like me? And all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you come across that when you're talking to people in your circle?
Yeah. So my daughter will tell you I am the strictest mother ever. So we have tried to kind of limit that because of the horror stories like that I have heard and things like that. But yeah, I think the thing is for young people now is that there's just no break from it. You know, 20 years ago, if you're having a hard time at school, at least you could come home and, you know, at least escape it. And I'm not excusing it or anything like that. But now it's just there all the time. Like, so you never, ever escape it. You don't ever have a break. Yeah. And it's that constant, you know, fear of missing out. It's the constant like comparison. And that's like, it's not healthy. It's not healthy for any of us, let alone, you know, young people. And young people being able to see these comparisons and seeing these likes, like, you know, no wonder it's affecting mental health because it's, you know, constantly there. Oh, they haven't liked my post, therefore, you know, they must not like me. And then you get your inner critic and then all of that just goes around, you know, your head. So I do think it's a really difficult thing to manage, like as a parent as well, because you are, you know, thinking you don't want your kids to be left out and them being, you know, kind of ostracized because they're not on this app and they're not on that. So it really is a really, really tricky thing to kind of navigate around, which is why, you know, positivity is so important and, you know, trying to teach, looking at the person and a lot of things, you know, I talk about my show, celebrating your wins. And this is about you celebrating. It's not about you getting 1,000 likes. Like it's, you know, about you celebrating, wow, I've actually done this. I'm really proud of myself.
Yeah, and you know, it's in, you know, touching on that as well. You know, you touched on that as well. It's not just the young ones. You know, I mean, how many? I'll use the word grown ups for a better word. You know, in there, how many grown ups when they first wake up in the morning before they even have the morning cup of coffee, they're checking the social media. Yeah, to see what's happened, see if they've got a like or an impression, whatever, or a comment from the last post. You know, it's happening.
Yeah.
You know.
I think the other thing that's really challenging is the whole thing about comparison. You know, we obviously will say to people, you know, comparison's the stealer of joy. And it is, because you never win in comparison. And yet social media, what people don't realize is that people can airbrush things and change things. You know, we've had the whole palaver of Princess Kate, you know, changing a photograph and see how that sort of got a response. But people change things to give an impression, which actually isn't real. And then you're back to what you were saying earlier, Steve, about, you know, what's real, what isn't, what's fake, what's genuine. And yet our young people will see these things and feel that sort of peer pressure. And yeah, I'm fortunate. I've got 3 daughters all grown up. I've got 8 grandchildren. And the thing about my daughters is they do sort of limit screen time and access to things just to protect their kids from some of these things. But the other side of the coin is on an educational front, fantastic resource. So if it's managed well, you know, you don't need to go to a library now. You've got all that resource at your fingertips, unless you're like me and you like handling a book.
Yeah. Oh, we're nearly in Betamax area, Phil.
Oh, dear.
for those young enough that don't know what that is, then that joke will go past you. But and Phil, what you were saying earlier as well about the people out, you know, they're talking to other on the phone. One of the highest read blog posts that I did many years ago was I put this. It was a spoof post that I wrote, and it was, I've just heard today from a recruitment company that candidates are now being asked to bring their mobile phone into the interview so the interviewer can ask them a question over the table and they can answer it on the phone, right? The response I got was, I knew it had come to that, right? What a world do we live in, you know? but it's secret. I've just seen this lovely quote here from a Dr. Sue Peacock, who's a consultant health psychologist, and it says, if you sleep with your phone nearby, subconsciously you are expecting a message, so you will sleep lighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting, eh? You know, just at that subconscious level. So you then you don't get a good night's sleep and you're tired and all that kind of thing. One of the other things as well within that thing, it was mentioned in that thing about distraction. Okay. Mm. Now, one of the big issues that people get when they say I've got no time for me or everything like that is overwhelm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're doing something and you then every notification that pops up, beep, beep, or email that comes in, you're moving away from what you want or what you're aiming to do, and that distraction, I'd suggest that that's going to add to your overwhelm and feel more busy. Yeah. Agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think the whole thing, like you're saying about sleep, it's vital that, you know, people are able to experience the full depth of sleep. And because if not, then A, the body's not fully able to repair itself. Mm-hmm. You're not able to process the events of the day and store those. So, you know, it's almost like everything's still rattling around, but you're not making any real sense of it. It's sleep deprivation prevents us from being able to problem solve, be creative, and even at times want to engage with anybody else. You just think, I can't be bothered. I'm tired. And I don't know about you guys, but sometimes if I've been on the screen for a while, I feel drained. I feel exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd go with that. Would Laura, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting one. I think I've always got the kind of the reverse. When I say reverse, I mean as in for me, the sleep kind of thing is disruptive, etc. But I also see people using social media actually as the distraction, because it is actually calming their brains almost like it's a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And almost that actually in some ways it gets their brain to calm down from everything else that's going on around them. So it's almost like the reverse for me.
But Laura, could that be a distraction from dealing with an issue in life though? You know, because
and I think that's the thing, and that's why I'm kind of like really curious about it, because I think it is a distraction from life. And I think that's why people sit there going like this, scrolling down their phone constantly, is because they don't want to deal with it. So that there's sort of, it's almost like a comfort blanket in some respects. Mm-hmm. And therefore they take it with them to bed, because there's again that's the comfort thing and the avoidance thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, I see it like a drug. So, but arguably, this is the fine line with sleep, where it's like it can actually pacify, because actually if they are brain is going on around them and they can't calm that, and actually the phone is calming them for a period of time to actually get to sleep. I don't know. I mean, I've got no scientific you know background to that, but I guess it. You know, I mean, as you know, I have a lot of experience working with widows and widowers, and, you know, they do very much cling to their phones as something in order to ground them that's external to themselves, because everything's changed. And no, their sleep isn't brilliant, but actually sometimes they can get to sleep better because they've had the calming influence of, you know, something on their phone that has distracted them significantly enough to calm them to get to sleep. Now, whether they stay asleep is another matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, but to get them to sleep, to calm them down, actually, you know, it is, it's just a slightly different perspective. And it came from something I was reading yesterday, all about what we do when we're experiencing unprecedented uncertainty in our lives, and we cling on to things that are external to ourselves because we internally feel, you know, out of sync, I guess. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I personally do check my phone. I can't say I'm subliminally taking messages from my phone or going to receive one. But I don't do anything with it. And actually, I actively, first thing in the morning, will physically write before I even touch the phone, because there's a conscious, you know, I've actually had to write. There's something intentional about that I don't get with a phone. I mean, frankly, with my eyesight, I can't read what's on the phone. So, you know, that doesn't help either.
Yeah.
I guess the phone, that can affect our circadian rhythm that we have as well, and things like that. And I guess, you know, from what you're saying, I mean, if you were listening to a mindfulness meditation thing to get you off to sleep, I can get that. Yeah. But if you're on LinkedIn giving it the latest, I think that's
I guess it's it depends what you're doing. I mean, I know, you know, for example, widows and widowers will sit in a group and just get a level of calming, knowing that they are in a place that they've read a few comments, that they're not alone, and that kind of calms them. But it's a Facebook group they've gone into to get that calming because they're on their own. So there is there, you know, I suppose you'd call it a kind of meditation, a kind of mindful pause, because it is intentional what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, not necessarily that it's as thought through as that, but that's what it's giving them. It's giving them that sense of mindful intentionality. Is that a word?
Okay.
Do you think, Laura, that what we need to do as a society is recognize that we're all unique individuals?
Yeah.
And so what's right for one is not necessarily right for another. And I'm just, as you were just describing that scenario, I was just thinking, you know, what I hear people saying about not having coffee after a certain time in the day because it affects their sleep. Yet I'm sat here drinking a lovely coffee and it has absolutely no impact on my sleep.
And I did think when you picked it up, Phil, exactly that. I mean, you know, I can't drink coffee anyway, but you're absolutely right. It is that whole thing of what's mindful for one in terms of technology will be very different to another. I can't personally go onto Facebook very easily without feeling like there's a lot of noise and I come away kind of going, like I've done the mad dash, you know, through the Christmas sales, because that's the kind of sensation I get. But then equally, I use technology when I go swimming and I am listening to hardcore dance music as I swim, and people can't believe that I will do that. But I find it exceptionally cathartic.
Well, again, it's having that balance, though, and realizing that thing, isn't it? You know, like you've just described there, two really opposites, Laura. One drives you mad and whatever, one's calming. So it's understanding that balance. And Zoe, I've just got another thought. When, I don't know what you think about this, but there's an ad on the telly now from a well-known mobile phone company, and it shows all the family in different rooms, kids sprawled out, bored to tears, laid on the bed, because it's not broadband time for family. And then the broadband times get switched on, and everybody comes alive. And I go, what message is that sending?
Yeah.
You know which
it's
one I
not
mean.
Not really promoting, like, you know, family time together. And it's, you know, basically saying that everyone's really miserable when there's no Wi-Fi. So, yeah, it's not the best message.
Right. And there's also just talking about there on, because I don't know the exact research, I won't quote it, but there's something about the light emission, blue light from a phone and a screen as well that can affect things. So, you know, we've talked about lots of things there about. So what have you got any thoughts and tips for getting that balance? I mean, I'll share some that I've come across, but have you got any thoughts and tips that people could probably take away and maybe help themselves not get big phone addiction?
One of the big things for me is, like, and I've been trying to be a lot better at this, is just try and live in the moment more. Like, the thing for me is, so if you listen to my show, you know I'm a massive Madonna fan. I went to see Madonna in October and I could not believe literally every single person stood there with their phone recording the concert. And I was just like, what? Like, just enjoy it. Like, it's just unbelievable. Okay, you're going to be able to watch it back, but, you know, you're never, ever going to get this experience again. This is potentially the last time she's going to tour, and you're, like, there, just with your phone, seeing it through a video. And, again, the same when you go to kids, you know, whatever, assemblies and all this, all the parents just filming it. And it's like they're actually missing it half the time because, you know, the video's not on or whatever. And so I've made a real conscious effort to just not do that and actually just enjoy being in that moment, because that moment's never going to come back.
It's a little bit like, you know, people will complain if they go to a concert and the concert's actually on a screen, not live. And all of a sudden it's going, well, you know, I haven't paid this money for this type of concert. And yet, what you've just described, though, is the fact that people are watching a concert on a screen.
I just say live in the moment and just try and embrace yourself. But also, like we were talking about distractions that the phone can bring, maybe use pen and paper for stuff. I'm a massive fan of, like, writing down things, journaling, just you know, put your phone in another room and like write things down, particularly if you're like, you're, you know, creative or you're trying to, I don't know, come up with some creative ideas or something, like just kind of ditch, you know, the phone and put it in a different room so that you don't have those, you know, things popping up, and turn off notifications as well so that you're in control of, you know, when you go in, you're not being like kind of guided by the social media platform or your phone itself.
Cool. I'll share some of these things that I've digged out. Where did that come from? Dug out from the Circle Health Group. And we could just run through these fairly quickly. So then, delete any apps and remove or unfollow friends and accounts that make you feel bad, sad, drained, overwhelmed, stressed, or generally uncomfortable. Okay. There's an interesting one. And it's interesting because I've had so many people this last fortnight add me to a mail chimp newsletter or whatever that I've not even given permission to do so. So they've just been immediately unsubscribed and reported because that's just crazy. Turn off your notifications and sounds so you're not distracted. Okay. And that research suggests that once distracted, this is interesting, it takes on average 23 to 25 minutes to return back to what you're doing.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
I will say to follow on Zoe's comment, I try to structure my day and take what I would call a proactive choice about when
I
have the phone nearby and when I'm not. I've never had alerts on my phone anyway. But I do, you know, the first couple of hours in the day, I don't have the phone even in the same room. I'm literally focused on what I'm doing. And that does sort of almost ground me for the day and the way I'm setting it up. I mean, I do get, I'm not going to say that I'm perfectly, you know, absent of the phone. It does help not being able to see the screen very well. I give you that. Thank God for WhatsApp on laptops, because I can see that. Otherwise, you know, I would be stuffed. But I hear what you're saying, Steve, about the subscribe thing. Actually, one of the things that I now do, and I shouldn't perhaps be saying this out loud, but I actually have an email that is for subscribes, because with all this automation, you know, whilst you might not have actually given out your email address, all these automation tools are actually going out to find people's email addresses and are being put on there, because there is a general assumption, perhaps not necessarily right or in line with GDPR, that if it's somewhere available on the internet, in the public domain, then, you know, if someone's mined it, however they've got to it, then, you know, fair dibs. But my problem is that, you know, literally I sign up for one thing because I want to attend one event. And then I'm subscribed suddenly, despite the fact that, you know, I have clicked the boxes saying, no, please don't subscribe me forever. There was a recent situation where I literally tracked it in the end because I had, you know, I was taking screenshots because I was getting so frustrated. I actually in the end said, delete me off every single mailing list. I still got it for the subsequent 3 weeks after that, until I actually wrote an email to the MD saying, enough's enough now. I do not want any of this stuff. And I mean, I haven't got time to go through continually unsubscribing stuff. And I do find that very, very frustrating, because you know, that is something that, to your point, Steve, I haven't asked for, but then actually the organisations aren't making it easy for me to cut off. So I actually now have, as I say, a separate email that is the one that if I'm going to an event, I still see it because Gmail, fortunately, is fairly okay. But it means that it's not interrupting my main email account, which I'm very, very careful about who I give that email address.
Yeah.
I can't mentally cope with that noise. It's impossible.
Yeah, no, I'm getting that. What Phil, what one that, just picking up on what you were saying, he says, remember, talking over an issue face-to-face still remains the most efficient and successful way to solve a problem.
Yeah. Right? Do you know the reason for that is that something like, I'm trying to remember the figures now, but I think about 30% is words. The rest of communication is body language and tone.
Mm.
And on technology, we lose something of that. You know, yeah, we can see each other on screen and so on, but actually, you know, the actual full sort of impact of that communication, I completely agree. Yeah. It has to be sort of face-to-face. And so many people misconstrue comments made by others and sort of get it wrong, and then conflicts arise. And you're thinking, but I didn't mean that. That's not what... Yet you don't realize how you've put something in a text message or an email, how that actually comes across to somebody else. So I always say, if I want to resolve something or tackle something, I'd rather pick up the phone, talk to somebody, or actually, best still, meet them face to face over a coffee.
Because you like coffee, Phil. Yes. I didn't read that. There's one here that I didn't realize this, you know, for those that do want to take their phone to Beddy Byes with them. Okay. You can, there are apps that will change the light on your screen. I didn't know that. Get rid of the blue light. Never knew that. And here's a classic one. It's also a good idea to turn off all devices an hour before you go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Steve, on that point, I understand why they're saying it, and you know, and I'd agree with them in the main. However, one thing that really struck me was, and I think it's what's been alluded to already, that for some, like Laura said, for some, you know, some of these things are actually good for them. So, for example, if you're wanting to calm yourself down, there's some great apps on the phone that you can use to help calm yourself and sort of lower your stress levels. Music. I love to listen to music, and sometimes I actually like to listen to soft music as I'm going to sleep. And the other thing as well is there's apps that monitor your sleep. So if you're wondering why you keep waking up in the night, or, you know, what's actually going on in the night, you can actually have an app that sort of monitors your sleep and can identify when you've gone into a deep sleep or the different levels. So, you know, I think the thing that's really important is people need to know what's right for them. And like you were alluding to earlier about the fact that if somebody or something is causing you anguish, then being able to recognize it, so that's being in tune with yourself, and also recognizing where that sort of unsettledness or anxiety, that stress coming from, and being able to deal with that rather than sort of just say a blanket. So it means we need to understand ourselves better.
Self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think one thing I picked up from that, and then if we'll wrap up, if you've got anything to add, we'll do it now. But one thing I just picked up from that thing is this balance about well-being. If something is enhancing your life, right, and improving it, then that may not be a bad thing. But if it's becoming addictive and you're feeling overwhelmed with things and you're feeling stressful with things, then that's the time to look at things and make a change. So I think that's a balance that we could probably finish off on, I guess, if that makes sense. Anything to add before we finish, Zoe?
Oh, the only thing I will say is just talking about the whole sleep, going to sleep and things. Recently, I've started colouring just before bed, and it has helped me sleep massively, like just colouring. So, yeah, there's a tip. Try it.
There's a tip. Put the phone down and get your colouring book out.
Get your colouring pencils out.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We don't mean getting a tin of paint and decorate a room, by the way. We don't mean that. Laura, anything you want to add to finish off?
Not really. I just think it's just reminding ourselves that it's a proactive choice about what we do, you know, and whether it is working for us or whether it's not, it's us to make that choice. So yeah,
okay. Mm. Okay. And enjoy your Betamax before you go to bed, Laura. That's Phil, anything to finish off with?
I just want to pick up on that word balance. I think there's good and bad in all of this, but we have to recognize that there needs to be a balance there, because there are some things that are really good for people and then some things that clearly aren't. And individually, we just need to be intentional, both in caring for our own well-being and knowing when to switch things off or use things.
Cool. Wonderful. Well, look, thanks for joining us on tonight's conversation on the porch. Look forward to next month's, when we're talking about the connection between physical and mental wellness. Looking forward to that. So whatever you're doing for the rest of the evening, have a wonderful evening. Look forward to next month. Phil, enjoy your coffee. Okay? Take it easy. Zoe, enjoy your colouring, whatever. And have a good evening. Okay, see you soon. This has been Conversation on the Porch. Owen will be joining me on the next episode, walking up the gravel drive and knocking at the door. This has been Conversations on the Porch.
This is Yawa Radio.